In this episode with Marielle Wittmond, we talk about people pleasing, something I personally struggled with a lot growing up and building my business in the very beginning. And I've also have seen how many of us women are struggling to overcome people pleasing and how much it stands in the way of true empowerment. We have had so much conditioning to be a good girl and serve, ensure others feel good way before our own needs and desires. Yet to truly be empowered, to succeed, to make a real difference in the world, and to truly be authentic, we can't please everyone. Neither can we put people pleasing above our own value and what we can create. Letting go of people pleasing pisses some people off, naturally, but it also allows us to rise and truly create value. Marielle Wittmond is a transformational guide with diverse heritage. She's a yoga and meditation teacher, breathwork facilitator, certified health coach and life coach based in Ibiza. And a lot of her work involves somatic methods of reconnection and empowerment. Marielle has become an expert in tackling perfectionism and people-pleasing, giving women the tools to navigate transitional moments and bring them back to their innate, embodied wisdom. She shares the deep wisdom of Mayan cosmology together with more modern forms of self-development, guiding others from ego to soul through embodied knowledge. For us women, it is possible to have it all and embody our truth and power in all areas of life. Feminine Power Podcast is your guide to reconnecting with your feminine essence, reclaiming your power, and rising into your fullest potential. I'm your host, Maria Grinina, co-founder of Feel, the feminine embodiment platform. And here on this podcast, I interview our expert community and our members, and we together share transformative tools, intimate conversations, and embodiment practices, bringing you a wealth of wisdom and practical tools to support your journey. Follow this podcast for your weekly inspiration. And if you'd like to go deeper into your embodiment journey and the awakening of your sexual energy, check out our online membership linked in this podcast description.
And when it comes to people pleasing, it's usually a loss of sense of self, right? We feel highly depleted. We feel burnt out. We feel resentful. We feel taken advantage of. And most of all, we feel disconnected from our truth. So when we look at women in particular and feminine energy, we're disconnected from our intuition. We're disconnected from our bodies. We're disconnected from just that deep sense of self. And so, you know, it can feel like the worst of things to kind of hit those bottom moments. But I actually think these moments of transition, these moments that allow us to truly connect with who we are the greatest gifts that we could ever have. I've been a life coach and a yoga teacher for a decade now, both of which happened around the same time. And it was shortly after I left about 11 years in the entertainment industry. I used to represent models. And then when I left that, I worked in casting. And by the time I was 31, I was overseeing a company across Europe and South Africa. I was completely burnt out and dissatisfied and unhappy with life. And, you know, it's that moment that kind of shakes your foundation and asks you, like, are you on the right path? I knew in the core of my being that what I was doing wasn't what I wanted. And it took a lot of courage to leave that. And eventually I did something I should have done when I went into university, which was spend some time exploring my options. And I never really had that opportunity. So I spent about 2 years kind of jumping from job to job, from study to study, trying to figure out what it was that I wanted to do. But within that period, I also trained as a yoga teacher and eventually as a life coach. And since then, my people pleasing, you would think it would have been at a height in the university years. Now, kind of looking back, I mean, even as a teacher, I wanted everybody to like me. I found it really hard to find my voice. I found it really difficult to cater my classes to something that was authentic to me as opposed to wanting it to be for everybody. So I was like, I'm going to cater to men and to women and to all ages. And I mean, it was a tricky initiation because obviously you can't please everyone. And the more that your focus is on pleasing others, then you really lose the creativity of what it is that you do. So over time, I started to attract certain personality types. And I think this happens often with coaches or therapists that, you know, the most important thing really is the relationship between us. And so a lot of times you'll find that the people that are drawn to you are drawn to you because of your experience and what you've overcome. And I was naturally working with women in particular who struggled with people pleasing, perfectionism, overachieving, this sort of need to be needed and to perform. And it wasn't until, and this will sound quite crazy given that it's been 10 years, but it really wasn't until the last couple of years that I decided to focus exclusively on women. And a lot of that has to do with my relationship with my mother and also with me sort of rekindling my ancestral roots. So my mother is Mexican, and growing up, we had a very difficult relationship. And the relationship changed when I left to university, but it became more of a friendship. And yoga became something that we did together to kind of heal our past. But because I had spent so much of my formative years struggling with my relationship with my mom, it really disconnected me from Mexico and from my heritage and from those roots. And so in the last couple of years, I wanted to focus for me personally in my healing journey on healing sort of that lineage and the relationship of women in my family and why we were so heavily in our masculine and why, I mean, my grandmother worked so hard on my mother's side, built one of the biggest schools in Mexico, was like a powerhouse of a woman. But I had the worst relationship with her, and there was no vulnerability, and there was no sort of real love and softness, and it just lacked so much. And I can see how that impacted my mother and then consequently my relationship with my mom. So over the last couple of years, my focus has been very much on women and these disconnections that we have. I mean, ultimately, it starts with the connection to ourselves. When we are able to come back to ourselves, I find that we're able to come back to each other because everything starts with us. Everything that we experience externally is a projection of what is happening with us internally. And the moment that we pause and look at what's going on, I mean, we can break patterns. We can sort of rewrite these ancestral narratives that get handed down to us generation after generation. And I think people pleasing is a huge one. If you have parents that were people pleasers, the likelihood of you being a people pleaser is incredibly high. But not only that, I think we're all so vulnerable in our youth that emotionally unstable caregivers or feelings like you have to tiptoe around your parents or that love might be conditional, this whole notion of good girl, bad girl, it really plays into this need to please because we rely so heavily on our parents or our caregivers growing up. And it creates this foundation of, in order for me to survive, in order for me to receive love, I need to do what other people want. And that's where the initial betrayal begins.
You started with your beautiful personal story, and thank you for sharing it. I'm wondering if you would share, given all of your experience, personal and working with women, how people-pleasing is shaping in childhood. Like, how would people learn to be such good girls? What being a good girl means?
So I'll give personal examples, both me with my parents, but also now me with my daughter, which has been a huge sort of mirror into a lot of the work that I do. I have incredible parents. My parents have given me every opportunity, love I've never wanted for anything. But that doesn't change the fact that growing up, I had a father who would get very angry, or who grew up with a very English cultural conditioning of children are to be seen and not heard, and all of these sort of things. So what I felt as a child was that I didn't want to upset him and that I couldn't have a voice, especially as a child, and especially with that whole idea of children should be seen and not heard. So I would stay quiet. Whereas with my mom, she would go silent. My mom's sort of response to overwhelm or to anger or to whatever she was experiencing was to give the silent treatment, which made me feel like I didn't exist. So I would do anything in my power not to be in those situations where I felt like she was going to give me the cold shoulder. And so these are almost like two polar extremes of the spectrum, but as a child caught in the middle that doesn't want to rattle or upset either side, then you do everything you can. So with my father, it was very much about performing. It was about achieving. It's like, how can I get his attention so that he's proud of me? And with my mother, it was really just, how do I keep her happy? Because I don't want to be invisible to her. I want to remain present. And it's hard because let me tell you, as a parent, you can try to do everything right, and there's chances are that you'll still get things wrong. And I'm a big believer that we choose our parents and that we're on the paths that we're on for reasons that, you know, where it's our journey, it's our learning here on this planet, in this life. But I look at my daughter, and she is very eager to please. And it's a huge conundrum for me because I see this beautiful girl who's just really desperate for validation and just really wants to be seen and wants to be perceived as good. And it's been a lot of work for me to help her have boundaries and to honor when she says no. I mean, prime example, I'll have my two kids trying to play with my daughter's toys, and my daughter will say, no, I don't want my brother to have these toys. And my instinct is to be like, be a good girl, just share your toys, give it to your brother. And I have to have a moment of actually, no, you're right. These are your toys. And you do have a right to say no. I want you to be aware of the consequences, because if your brother's playing with his toys and you want to play with his toys, he can do the same thing, right? He could say no to you. But I want there to be that sense of, you don't always have to bend over backwards in order to be considered good. And what is good, right? I think it's, you know, it's that understanding of bad behavior doesn't make you a bad person. And I think one of the worst things that we can get caught into is this whole spiral of shame, that we are bad people, not that we've done bad things, but this sort of binary black and white good girl, bad girl really makes you feel like you are a bad girl, as opposed to having done a bad thing. And so it shames us. And that shame makes us want to please, makes us want to do whatever we can to make sure that we are no longer seen in a negative light.
Well, about parents, it is so true, right? We can have the most amazing parents and we'll still have struggles that we find in ourselves in childhood. And we can also have harder upbringings. And, you know, doing this work, I feel like it's important to highlight, as you say, you've had amazing childhood, right? But still, mm-hmm. There are certain things to work on. And I feel like they're gifts, really, like receiving these kind of experiences so that we're then able to work on them and grow and then hopefully also share these gifts and learnings with others. So, so powerful. Thank you. And thank you for sharing how you grow your daughter. I must say it reminded me of my own childhood, like, because my mom would always tell me to share. And I definitely had to work through my nice girl problem for quite a while, especially as I'm becoming a bigger and bigger businesswoman. And I must say that I noticed how strongly this concept of a nice girl stands in the way of a true success, of getting anything done, of getting anything big out there. So it's impossible to please everyone. And then if we want to please everyone, we literally can't make any positive impact in the world. And that's why I feel like this conversation is so important, especially on this nice girl idea.
So I love that you use the word nice, because nice. There's a difference. No, I'm really glad that you did, because I remember hearing this not too long ago, and it's really stuck with me. There's a very big difference between nice and kind. Yeah. Nice always has a desire to be perceived as nice. Nice often has the expectation of a return. Nice is often something somewhat superficial, like the smile that you plaster on your face when you tell everyone that you're fine, right? That's nice for me. Mm-hmm. Kind, on the other hand, has no expectation for a return, has no desire to be perceived in any way. It is simply from the generosity of your heart that you behave in a certain way. So nice is very much the people pleaser. Nice is this need to be sacrificing yourself for the needs of others, but because you want some kind of return, whether it's that you're perceived as a good person, whether it's that you become people's go-to because you're their yes person, whatever it might be. But nice comes with consequences, because we are often disappointed when our expectations aren't met. We often feel resentment when people don't treat us in the same way. We often communicate through passive aggressiveness because we don't know how to communicate in healthy ways. So we don't want to come across as the bad guy, but then the way that we feel has us, you know, hot and cold, essentially. So I love that you use the word nice, mm-hmm. because I think that's the easiest way to describe the difference between authenticity and people pleasing. And to your point, you know, professionally, you cannot be a people pleaser and be creative, because creativity requires authenticity. And authenticity is the conviction that not everyone is going to like you, but you like you, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to do it your way. You're going to share it your way, and you're going to feel comfortable and confident in the knowledge that it's not for everyone, but the right people for you will find you. And that's huge.
Exactly. You know, this, I have said nice girl instead of good girl, because I've been looking into this concept for some time, and I've been speaking with a few women about it, and I've been understanding how deep it is in them to be this nice. They always say this word nice, right? And I feel like I kind of really don't like this word. If someone tells me, oh, this looks nice, you are nice, it feels like they're not really saying the truth even. They just want to say something kind, but I feel like this word nice really has this kind of connotation.
Totally. Even to say like, oh, yeah, that's nice. Like, yeah, it's like, kind of like, meh.
Yeah.
Like not real.
It doesn't feel like, right, like a real compliment, right?
Exactly.
We kind of understand how nice girl turns up out there, right? I'm wondering, like, how common is that in your view? How often do people come to you with this kind of issue, or how common do you feel it is in the world these days?
I think it's incredibly common. I think it's difficult because as women, we're navigating a history that not so long ago, you know, didn't give us many rights and portrayed us. And I mean, even go back to the 50s and 60s with the advertisings of, you know, woman at home cooking and cleaning and, you know, in high heels and with a smile and doing it all. And she's doing it perfectly. And the thing that I've come across the most in the 10 years that I've been working in what I do is there's three common things that I find impact women. And it's the need to do it all, the need to do it perfectly, and the need to do it alone. And I think historically, you know, we've been battling to overcome our role in society and the way that women are perceived. And you know, nowadays, I think we've gone in the opposite direction. And that's why everyone is so heavily in their masculine, because we felt like we needed to be more manly in order to play a role in the world as it is today, but it's left us a little bit confused, I think. And so for women, I mean, you even look at it in a professional sense in terms of pay, right? I think quite often women do get paid less than men, but quite often it's because of our people-pleasing tendencies. There's this feeling that we should be grateful for the job that we have, that we should, there's a lot of guilt. Guilt is one of the biggest emotions that I deal with when I work with people around people-pleasing. And I actually think guilt is an alarm bell that should always highlight that it's a form of manipulation to get you to do what other people want you to do. So, I mean, the question of like how many people, I mean, I wouldn't statistically be able to say, but I would say a great majority are probably people pleasers because we historically come from this whole world of wanting us to be nice girls or good girls or, you know, be seen and not heard. And we haven't had a voice until very recently. And when we do have a voice, it often gets used against us. We're shamed. You know, one of the best ways that I heard it used was that we've been shamed out of all of our appetites, right? Our appetite for food, our appetite for sex, our appetite for pleasure, our appetite for knowledge. It's always been used against us as women. There's a lot to overcome there. And I think because we're coming at it on the lower hand, I think there's just this feeling that in order to be accepted, in order to be a part of the game and whatever game that might be, we need to focus on others. And I've got to be honest, I think to be a woman in this modern world is really confusing mm-hmm. because we're juggling a lot of different things. We're trying to step up in a very man-centered world. You know, even when you look at how we behave, you know, men work on circadian rhythms, our menstrual cycle, like we're moon-based and our energy, our hormones, everything is just very different. But none of that's been taken into account until extremely recently. Medical studies haven't been done on women until recently. It was always take birth control pill. Like the birth control pill will fix everything for a woman. There's a lot to unpack around what it is to be a woman. So I think people pleasing is kind of like the easy solution. It's like, all right, if I want to receive love, if I want to feel worthy, if I want to feel like I matter, then maybe I need to be needed, right? So let me try to please and let me put a smile on and let me make it seem like I'm this happy, perfect woman.
Yeah. What I would really invite everyone who is listening to do now is just to digest these words and just to understand it's okay to be confused, right? And as you say, so many people struggle with these concepts of really just wanting to be accepted and therefore trying to be nice. So it is so normal to feel this way. But what's also really amazing is that it's definitely possible to change with the right direction and the right tools and a deep connection to yourself because the truth is inside. I want to reflect back with my family, I guess, because when you were explaining this story around women just trying to be good, trying to do it all and trying to be also perfect and hardworking. And the image of my mother came through to me. Of course, also grandmothers, like, oh my God, those women, how hard they worked. But the funny thing about the story of my mother, my mom has been, she got into this really good marriage very early on in her life at 23. And my father has given her everything. She never had to work hard. She didn't have to earn her own money. And my dad would always provide all she needs for her. So I've been growing up looking at this perfect kind of relationship. But what was confusing and what she's only changing now, 30 years into the marriage, was her real desperate need to work hard and work all the time. Despite her having this really beautiful life where she could just actually relax and perhaps focus her energy on more creativity and things that she would create for the world, she had to work hard cleaning the house 24/7, cooking 24/7, coming up with more work activities. My dad would always tell her, look, when you go to work as a medical doctor, you spend more money on your gas to get to work and back than they pay you. So technically, I pay for you to work because doctors get paid really, really low money. So her whole life, she had this idea that she had to work hard despite having the conditions not to do so. And how it was reflecting on the relationship in the family and the dynamic is that my dad was very, very confused and frustrated because here he is working so hard to provide, to create a perfect life, and his wife still can't relax and give him the softness that he's craving. And as a child, I would always see that. I would notice it and see that maybe that's why I grew up a bit like, oh, I'm not going to work as hard as my mom. Years later, now as she stopped doing her medical work, she read a few spiritual books and become very inspired, started leaning more into the feminine, especially as I do this work for the recent 5 years. And she started just learning about movement, relaxation, astrology. And they're still together with my father. And she became a completely different person. And only now, after 30 years of in this marriage, she's given him what he always wanted. After she gave up on the hard work and allowed herself to stop being a nice girl, but to actually relax and ease into it and see what else happens. And with that, she gave the biggest value to the family and to her loved husband.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just listening to you, it's something that I think is quite common. And I'd be curious with your mom, is the sense that I get is almost this need to prove ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? This working so hard, and it's, you know, Brené Brown would talk about it as the need to please, perform, and perfect.
Yeah.
And it really pushes us, and it drives us into overdoing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we lose the balance, and where I think it's become really tricky, because again, we're navigating a world where we're finally allowed to pursue the things that we want to pursue. Mm-hmm. And with that comes a great amount of passion. Like I can imagine your mom was probably working that hard to a certain degree because she loved it, I would hope, or that she was very passionate about it if she didn't need to do it. But at the same time, if, you know, when we work in relation to others, then it's about compromise, right? And how do we meet each other halfway? And when you mention confusion, for those that are listening, because I think, you know, as we talk through these things, it's very natural to be confused. But I would say confusion is a fabulous thing, because the moment you're confused, you're probably starting to get curious, right? Like, why am I confused? Like, what is the right answer? And I think as women, we need to be curious about everything. I mean, not even just women. I think the whole world, like there's so much false information, et cetera. But the more that we can be curious, the more we can start to break down a lot of these walls, a lot of these conditioning, a lot of how we feel, we can come back into the body. Because again, the more that we lean into the masculine, the more we're in our heads. And you can't think your way into feeling. You really have to be in the body. So that's where I think finding this balance between passion and softness, right? Between drive, determination, this motivation. I feel it in the work that I do. And I'm often being told, like, Marielle, you need to slow down. You need to slow down. And I do think that we can have drive and be soft at the same time. It's funny you say that you didn't want to follow in your mom's footsteps, but to me, you look like someone that's working really hard on something that they love to do, right? And that's a beautiful thing, because you're really trying to empower women. But there is sort of like a pattern, right? And we do get handed down these behaviors. And if we're lucky enough to kind of look at them and say, all right, I love that I have drive and that I have vision and that I have determination, but I also know how much the softness mattered, especially in relationship. Men want to be able to give, and a big thing about feminine essence is our ability to receive. We don't have to do it alone. We don't have to do it all. It's our ability to open up and say, I'm willing to get help and I'm willing to be supported.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. You've mentioned already the key, right, to reconnection to the truth, which is the body. Stop thinking so much and really connecting to the feeling. And here just to finalizing the story that you've reflected so beautifully on. That's exactly what happened with my mom. I mean, she's been overworking mostly. Of course, she loved being a doctor, but she'd had a lot of guilt that she carried from Soviet Union upbringing because of they had to work hard. They had like certain measurements of how hard you work and then certain rewards, etc. It was a bit crazy. But without getting into detail, what brought her deeper and back to kind of this deep life satisfaction that she's living now and is so inspiring was the practice of yoga and Vedic traditions. So she got into understanding more the Vedic traditions and the yoga, and then she started going deeper into also sexual energy work, going with me to some events, etc. And that's where she started really, really connecting back to this, I can just really receive and do what I truly love. She still works hard, but now as an astrologist from pleasure, not pressure. And that's amazing. And with that, I actually would love you to deep dive into these solutions. How would you usually tell people to start this path of reconnection to themselves and the truth?
I mean, look, there's no one size fits all. And yeah. I think the wonderful thing is that there's so many different things out there. So again, use that curiosity and start to explore. What are the things that call to you? Would you like to work one-on-one with someone? Do you feel called to work in a group environment? What are the areas that call to you? Is it more somatic based things? I mean, practices like yoga or whatever it might be, working with a coach, working with a therapist. It's curiosity. I think it's all about exploring your options and seeing what resonates. And it always takes that one step for new doors to open. And sort of the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results, like you really need to change it up. And I'd encourage, yeah, as much exploration and curiosity as you can, and be willing to invest in yourself. I think people pleasers have a very hard time prioritizing their own well-being because there's always somebody else that matters more, or money that can be spent on somebody else. But in the analogy of airplanes in an emergency, you got to put your own mask on first. You're not serving anyone if you're passed out. And I love the saying, you know, we give from the overflow of our cup, not what's in the cup. What's in the cup is ours. So really focus on filling your cup to the point of overflow so that you can then provide for those around you.
If you are resonating with this episode and you are ready to take your embodiment journey to the next level, I invite you to join the Feel membership, your guide on a journey of reconnecting with and embodying the power of your feminine energy. As a member, you'll get access to the daily embodiment practices created by our powerful experts and become a part of our community. Knowledge that you receive on this podcast is gold, but the real change happens when you integrate these learnings into your life. With our online membership, you can cultivate a consistent self-love and embodiment practice to nurture your energy. Our members are experiencing profound shifts from healing past traumas to reigniting their sensual fire to manifesting their wildest dreams. And we want that for you too. So if you are feeling the call to go deeper, check this podcast description for the link to join our membership. Now, you've mentioned a lot of paths that are mostly connected to more of an embodied way. And quite often when we have conversations about personal development, and I hear these questions of like, well, what exactly does this mean? How can you embody this feeling? What does this mean to just practice your way? You know, and I'm wondering, what does this all mean to work on yourself and invest in yourself?
Yeah. So, I mean, from an embodied standpoint, and I was right there with you guys, I was like, what does that even mean? But embodied means to be in your body. And there are a lot of things about being in our body and understanding the way that the body communicates. So the mind communicates through thought. Our body communicates through emotions. And to embody is to understand your nervous system and your body's sense of safety. So anytime that something happens, your body will instantly tell you whether it feels right or wrong, right? If you're triggered, there's usually a wound. There's all of this fascinating information that lives within our physical body. But if we don't know how to get into our body, what does it feel like? Where does it feel like? I mean, when I feel triggered, I get it instantly in my chest. And my chest, it almost feels like I'm finding it hard to breathe. And I protect my heart. So I'll hunch over a little bit and I'll cross my legs and I'll cross my arms. And that's kind of how I'll be engaging in that situation. And if I can understand that, then I can start to separate myself a little bit and be like, oh, wow, something's happened here that has either crossed a boundary or made me feel less than. We all have core wounds, these wounds from childhood that tell us we're not good enough, we're not worthy. If we can identify what those core wounds are and how they feel physiologically in the body, so how our nervous system responds to them in the exact same way that they did when we were little, then we can work on creating safety in the body so that when we feel triggered, we can actually look at it and say, this isn't mine. I'm not this little child that was relying on somebody else to come and save me. I can actually be that person for myself, and I can teach myself to calm down, whether it's through taking deep breaths, whether it's through awareness, like, oh, wow, I feel really triggered right now. What do I need? Where do I feel it? Where am I constricted? Can I move in a way to loosen things up? Can I shake to release what really isn't mine, but I'm just holding on to it because of a narrative? Because our brain and our body, they don't work on their own, like independently. They work together. So the mind will think a thought and the body will respond to it physiologically. And so if we can start to unpack the stories that happen in our mind and the way that our body responds to them, we can actually start to create new ways of living that actually feel much easier, right? Like in my mind, the opposite of the way I feel when I'm triggered is I feel like I can breathe. When I do work with clients, I always find it's kind of a three-step process. The first one is understanding. So if you're at the beginning of your journey, then it's about doing exactly what you're doing, listening to this podcast, trying to understand more. We got to learn, right? We got to become aware because we can't change what we don't know. But once you know, it's like, all right, what do I do with this? How do I change it? You start to integrate it. How does this relate to my personal experience? How does it relate to my life? How can I deconstruct what happened in my life? Again, connect with those core wounds, understand what my triggers are, understand how my body responds when these things happen, how I feel. And then it's the embodiment, right? So understand, integrate, and embody. It's like, okay, how do I bring these into my body? How do I bring myself back into my body?
Yeah. I want to break it down into pieces. Actually, let's have an example. Say I am having my nice girl moment, that I'm feeling my nice girl present very, very much. And it happens during an important business meeting. I feel like that's where, for me, it's the hardest. And say there is this opportunity in front of me where I could ask for a good amount of money and attention, exposure, whatever is important. And a good girl inside of me would say, oh, maybe somebody else could receive this. Are you sure you need this the most? Can you give the space so that other people can also take it? And also, how can you ask for that? It's like, are you sure you deserve it? Are you sure it's okay to ask? Maybe you can just wait until these people maybe just offer it to you. But if they don't offer it to you, it's okay. It's okay. While the strong woman in me would be like, I am doing something deeply important. And I need to make it work. And I'm here, the superpower here that's going to make a difference. But that superpower woman is like kind of for the background, because my nice girl is just taking the main seat right now. How could I change it in the moment, most likely through embodiment, and switch back into my power woman voice.
So, I love this scenario. I would say that it's really important to understand what a hell yes and a hell no feels like in your body.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you're like, what does it feel like if I were to give to you? You don't even have to ask for it. If I were to say, here's £500,000 for your business field to launch it. Like, what does that feel like to be, to receive, to be given, to be seen, to be acknowledged? How does it feel in the body? And that's your hell yes, right? Like, yeah, for me, again, like that ability to breathe is my yes. And then what is your no? So you're in a meeting and you have to ask for something, but you're feeling really insecure and you don't know. Like, do you feel small? Do you feel closed off? Is it hard to breathe? And don't confuse fear with excitement, because they feel the same way. So sometimes we have to get quite careful with the emotions that we're feeling. I actually think fear is a very good indicator of what you should be doing, as long as it's not life or death. So get into your body and understand, like, what feels like a no? Someone's taking advantage of you. That's a big one for me, right? They're taking advantage of you. They want to pay you less. Or they said they were going to pay you so much and they're underselling or whatever it might. What does that feel like in your body? And the more familiar you can get with the sensations of a yes and a no, then you can look at this scenario where you're having a nice girl moment and you can say, what's my body feeling right now? Am I betraying myself? Am I having a no moment, but my guilt and my people pleasing is sort of coercing me to come across as a nice person, right? Versus if you were to walk in there, ask for what you want, and you actually got it.
Yeah.
And that's the embodiment, right? It's understanding what your hell yes and your hell no's are, because you might even be the one responsible for your hell no. And that's the tricky part, because we self-sacrifice, we betray ourselves. And I often tell clients, I'm like, in these scenarios, ask yourself, in what way am I betraying myself right now?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're definitely betraying yourself if you're in this big meeting and you're being given this amazing opportunity and you're giving it away. It reminds me of that Marianne Williamson quote, and I always mention it. It's like, you're not doing anyone any favors by playing small.
Yeah.
So in those moments where you're feeling like a nice girl, connect with your body and say, am I nice or am I kind? Because there's a big difference there. And in this moment, what do I want? And then go for it. Feel the fear and do it anyways. That's how we gain confidence.
Absolutely. I love that. I must say, really embodying your hell yes and connecting to it, to me at this stage, after so much practice, it already feels just so pleasurable. I'm like, wow, I hope people just learn it in school.
Absolutely. I wish. And I mean, it's so important on so many levels, especially as we look at like child safety. People need to know their hell no's and their hell yes's and what they feel like, and to feel confident enough to speak them.
Yeah, especially children. I mean, as a mother, probably I would love you to share if there are any ways you teach your little daughter to feel these things. I definitely wasn't taught any of that as a child. And I can now, as doing this work, I'm like, oh my God, this has to be taught to like 5 years old so that they don't get into trouble as often.
We try to have very open and honest conversations. I think it's also really important. All of these self-regulation tools, breath work, aromatherapy, I mean, everything is applicable to children too.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching them how to take a deep breath, how to be with their feelings, how to try to communicate what's going on, telling them that they're not bad, but maybe something they did was bad. And then how do we work mm-hmm. with that? And that it's okay to say no. Right? No is a good, like you have a right to say it, but let's talk about the consequences and let's talk about what this means. It's not easy. I get it wrong often. And I usually, in hindsight, I'm like, that was the right way to have said it. But I do think for parents that are listening and all of this, be curious, be conscious, be intentional. When we have intent, it means that we're taking control of our lives. And as a parent, I think that's a huge thing with your children. Be intentional with them. Really try to get involved, try to understand, try to see it from their point of view. Also, best inner child work in the world, having a child, like, because you're literally looking at yourself in front of you and you can feel everything. It's really changed the way that I look at my upbringing and what it felt like to be a little girl who felt misunderstood or who didn't feel seen or who was desperate for attention. And I became a pleaser because that's how I got attention. And it's now the process of like unpacking that and learning a more authentic way of being.
So pleaser is really the opposite of authentic, which is quite a big statement. And I feel like not really understood by many people. And that's what I really want to take away from this episode, as most people do want to be authentic, right? Most people want to be in their full truth and power. And this concept can be the one that can be so deeply addressed and then really transform the entire life of people.
Definitely. Especially if you're a creative. Creativity requires authenticity. And the moment that you're doing something for the sake of pleasing, it's no longer yours, which means you're no longer being creative, right? You're just mimicking. As a yoga teacher, I teach creative sequencing. And every time I thought of like, oh, I want everyone to like this, I was like, the moment I think that way, I'm not teaching from my heart. I'm not teaching the way I want to teach, and it's no longer authentic.
Yeah. And that's the only way really to be successful is to become okay with some people not liking you. There is no one in the world who is like everyone.
And being okay with the notion that those aren't your people.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. They're not your people, but there are people for you. And those are the ones you want to find. Don't waste your time on people that aren't for you.
Yeah. Would you like to share some words of wisdom for people who would like to recognize patterns in themselves and who want to get on a path of healing or on the path of growth, especially those who struggle with just trying to be nice and lacking authenticity or wanting to be more authentic and powerful?
I would say don't be afraid of the messy middle. You know, kind of going back to what we talked about at the beginning, like the Saturn returns or the midlife crisis or whatever it is that has you coming to this moment of things need to be different. The way that I am isn't working for me, or the life that I'm living isn't working for me. Get excited about that, because these moments of transition, I think, are what life is all about. It's that void, the great unknown that we're so terrified of. The moment we give ourselves the courage to step into that great unknown, that's where the depth is. And I mean depth of living, depth of understanding, depth of existence. Like, you want to be in the depth, even though it feels scary and you don't know what's going to happen and you don't know how your life might change. Like, allow yourself, or even tell yourself, this is a really exciting time to explore and to do things that we should be allowed to do when we're young.
Feeling really good in the unknown is, to me, it's like, it's a key to happy life. That's how it is all the time. We can't control anything really. And just, it's an art of becoming so, so grateful and so comfortable, even if you just have no idea what's going to happen next, and staying curious.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all about trust. My favorite quote that I came across recently was, the opposite of uncertainty isn't certainty, it's trust.
Oh.
And that's because control is a fallacy. There's no such thing as certainty. Certainty doesn't exist. And if it did exist, there'd be no faith. There'd be no mysticism. And so the only thing that we have to counter this whole notion of life being so uncertain is trust.
Beautiful. I would love to share more about your work with the listeners. Would you like to tell us a bit more about your retreats and all your offerings?
Yes. So started doing my Sisterhood Rising retreats here in Ibiza. Ibiza is my hometown. It is one of the most magical places in the world. I am surrounded by just incredible, powerful women, and just the bonds of sisterhood are so authentic here. I've really never experienced anything quite like it. And so to be able to collaborate with some of these powerhouses on the island, and also to share the magic of Ibiza, I've got two retreats coming up that are specific to Sisterhood Rising in 2025. One's in May, one's in October. Mm. I'm also co-facilitating two retreats next year. One's going to be in June, and the other one, I think, is in September. So plenty of opportunities to come to this magic island. And the Sisterhood Rising in particular is a deep dive into who we are and who we're not, and all of the things that we confuse around feminine energy, and most importantly, the sacred bonds of sisterhood, just how powerful we are when we come together. I also have a group coaching course, and I do it twice a year. So the next cohort will be launching in January. And I feel like the combination between this group coaching and then the retreats are just next level, because the group coaching gives you a lot of those initial stages I was talking about of understanding. I bring a lot of science, neuroscience, heavy knowledge-based information into this course. We get together on 6 calls, and it's just such a sacred container, and the groups are always unbelievable. And then if you have the opportunity to come on retreat and meet each other, it's just the most wonderful thing in the world. So plenty of opportunities to work together. I also do one-on-one coaching, and I teach yoga. So I have a yoga app. And if you're ever in Ibiza, please let me know, because I do teach here as well.
Ah, amazing. People can find so many different ways of evolving, right, and growing. And you offer all this diversity of options, because I can say from my experience, like at certain stages in my life, I could only do in-person stuff, and that would be the most supportive. And at certain stages in my life, the online containers were the most powerful. And it's so amazing that these days people can find ways that work. And I really encourage more people to get into this path, because it's just so, so good and transforms the entire life. And that's it for today. I hope this episode has left you feeling inspired, empowered, and more connected to your truth. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to subscribe to the Feminine Power Podcast and leave us a rating. If you want me to ask any specific questions to our future guests, please do leave us a comment wherever you are listening to this podcast, and I will definitely address them. Your support means the world and helps us reach more women with this transformative work. And if you're ready to experience even more feminine magic, I invite you to explore the Feel membership. Head to feelup.co/membership or find the link in this podcast description to learn more and claim your spot. Until the next time, keep shining your light, keep embracing your unique journey, and keep rising into the powerful human you were born to be. I'm your host, Maria Grinina.